Fellow cartooners, thanks for landing over here at the Boing Podcast. I hope that this day finds you well. Today's broadcast is going to be a little different than the normal layout, and that is, it is more of a tribute to a past guest that I considered a wonderful friend, as well as a creative talent. You know, for those that have followed this webcast through the years, you may remember an interview that I conducted back in 2009, with the superstar illustrator Lowell Hess. You know, one of the things I remembered most back from that interview was how Lowell talked so passionately and really optimistically about his life and career and all of his art without the anger and frustration that one might expect from a man slowly being stripped of his artistic abilities at the hands of such a debilitating disease as Parkinson's. Lowell Hess was as determined and optimistic that day as he was throughout his entire life. So, I mean, I was so moved by this interview that I seized an opportunity to meet him in person at his residence in New Jersey. It was really one of the few intelligent moves I have made in my life, and one that I will never soon forget. Lowell Hess left us this past December. And just the other day, with that thought weighing heavy on my mind, I realized that I had conducted an additional interview with him that more or less discussed his creative processes in much greater detail. The interview ran about, I'd say, about 45 minutes and was probably a bit more casual in nature. Well, today is the day that I'm going to share this 45 minutes with you. I hope that Lowell Hess fans we'll really enjoy this, and I've never aired this before, and really I had to kind of rummage around the house to find it. I knew I had it, and I knew I had saved it. At the time, I really wasn't sure what I was going to do with it. I had already aired the original interview, and being that this was about 45 minutes in length, and more casual detail, talking more about the processes involved, I decided that it probably was just something I would just hold on to and just keep for myself. So, thinking about it now, again, I've decided to go ahead and play it. I hope that everybody enjoys it. And for those that are not familiar with Lowell's work, and that could include the newer generation, and I would understand that this younger generation may not be aware of some of the amazing talent that was out there, unless you're an art historian. So I would really advise you to check out LowellHess.com. He's got a website. I think Nancy put it together. It's got a lot of his illustration work on there, and it's a really, really informative, and it's a wonderful, wonderful site. And he's also got a book out. He had a book out. I would say it's a couple of years ago it came out. It's The Art of Lowell Hess. And that came out, I believe, it was about 4 years ago, actually, 2011 it came out. You can get that at Amazon. Just go to Amazon and type in The Art of Lowell Hess or Lowell Hess, and it will come up. I believe there's still some of the other books that he illustrated as well on there, like My Christmas Treasury, which is a wonderful book. One of the great lines, I have to tell you this, one of the great lines that made me laugh really out loud from this 45-minute interview, there was a brief discussion about the children's illustration books or golden books and just, you know, children books. And I believe the question was posed to Lowell, you know, why he stopped doing them, whatever. But it was funny because I think it was some, I hate to, I can't quote him exactly because I don't, but I know it was just hilarious. His response was, you know, they didn't pay anything. So he said, if I was going to starve, I'd starve on my own time. And it was just, it's just typical Lowell Hess. Just a pleasure to talk to and just so down to earth and just pretty much told you like it was. I mean, there was no sugarcoating it with Mr. Hess. That to me was refreshing in and of itself. So let's dive right into the encore interview with the legendary Lowell Hess. And rest in peace, my friend. And Nancy, this one's for you.
Okay, how are you?
Good. I first must apologize for getting back to you so late because I got, we went on vacation and then we came back and, you know, everything just starts.
You don't ever apologize for taking the vacation.
It was crazy. Yeah. We had a really good time though. We got back and, you know, we have a 10-year-old. So then we had to get him ready for, he's getting ready for school again and it's just been crazy.
So. Well, he keeps you busy. I know that.
That's for sure. Hey, I wanted to thank you for the copies of the comic strip. They're really good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
I submitted them years ago, and I realized that they're short coming now. But
But when you look at them, I cannot for the life of me figure out why you didn't get syndicated. I mean,
well, they said it. Perhaps we were making a mistake, but they felt that it couldn't be sustaining. And I had an idea they're right because I submitted them all wrong. What I did, I didn't submit 16 weeks of continues, you know, in one episode. I submitted each one to identify a different character.
Right.
And they thought that since they jumped around so much, they figured that probably they couldn't make it go.
Yeah, you were pretty much. It looked like you were trying to show them the different characters and develop that, you know, how
that
they
was
were
right.
going to develop.
And I would develop each one according to how it worked, and and I had lots of stories in mind that I never did even put down. I can think of one that's right offhand, as the horse is hiding behind a curtain and there's a storm going on outside, and the armored guy says, what are you so scared of? It's just a little old storm. It's nothing to be worried about. And about that time, crack, bang. And he says, move over.
It's cute. Yeah. You know what I really like is I'm not sure if it's the very first strip. If it was going intended to be the very first one, but I like how you have like, you've got like the witch, and she's got, there's pictures of all the characters that are involved.
Right.
And it's got their names next to it. That makes sense. I'm like, well, that's really good. That's a great start. And then there'll be your reference sheet.
I thought, I'm not proud of it or anything like that, but I thought it was better than some of the things they've been picking recently.
And oh, yeah.
So I had fun doing it anyway. And in my mind, I still work on it, although I don't produce it. I just love to think about it.
I love the little bat character. The little bat is hilarious.
Yeah, he's a character. And the spider.
Yep.
That was always having trouble with stringing up his net.
Right. And then the fly ruins it. He gets it one finish and the fly. And really, the spider would love to see a fly normally, but that was funny. That was really cute.
Well, yeah. I had many ideas for it anyway.
I see a lot of similarity, though, where Broomhilda looked a lot like your witch.
Well, when they first came out, it was even more evident.
Yeah.
And he slowly worked it into his own,
right,
which is normal.
I have nothing against Russell Myers. I just noticed that they're in the very early stages of his strip career, you could see the similarity there.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame him for anything at all. I mean, he submitted his thing, and they took it.
Right.
That's the way the game goes. But I had plenty to do, so I didn't worry about it.
Yeah. One question I did have, and I neglected to ask before, and I mean, if you're willing to answer it, great. If you don't want to talk about it, that's fine. But you're, you said you worked a lot. You worked in gouache, right?
Right.
And your illustrations. How did you, when you start, when you've got an idea, whether it came from your head or somebody else's, whatever, how did you start? Did you start with pencils, blue lines, and then?
Yes, what I did, I took a piece of tracing paper and penciled out a rough go. In other words, I put all the emphasis in it that I could in the sketch. Right. And then I placed that tracing paper over illustration board and with carbon underneath and traced it down quickly as I went. Having guidelines to follow, I could make small corrections as I went and get the most out of it. And then after I had the carbon on the illustration board, I just inked it in and painted it.
Wow. So you when you inked it, did you gouache over the ink or ink over the...
Well, actually, the inking was one system I used. Most of the time, it was all gouache. With a small brush, I put it on with the... Just a small brush.
Wow.
And some of the... I worked same size most of the time because every time you enlarge a thing, you've got a lot more area to cover.
It's true. Yes.
And sure. I could work tight enough that I could get away with that. And so most of the time, I work same size.
Yep. You always hear the... I've talked to several people, whether they're illustrators or comic strip artists. They're like, "Yeah, I'd love to work large, really large." But when you do that, yeah, it's that much more material you have to use, and it's that much more area you got to cover.
That's right.
So you work as small as you can possibly work that you're still comfortable with, you know.
Well, the time has made us worry about that, because since we started working small, they started saying, "All right, if you want to work small, I'll give you small to work." And now the comic strips are so small, you can't get anything on them.
I know.
You get the copy on it, and there's no picture room. It's a tough going.
It's scary for people like me that I still, I guess, because I grew up with the ultimate goal for me was to be syndicated, and I grew up that way. And now it's like you hear all the newspapers are going down, and you're like, what is going to be left? It's like the internet doesn't really pay, so where do you go? You know, it's kind of.
Well, the only thing that's making it now are the comic books,
right?
And also the computer art is getting most of the play,
right.
And I don't like most of that.
I know it's scary.
It's really very scary. I have two grandchildren that are extremely talented in that area. And I don't know what's going to come of them, because that's what they want to do, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm working on a children's book, and I'm on my second draft, typing it. And
yeah.
I'll illustrate it later. I'm going to illustrate it later, but I'm like, I don't know when I finish. I'm not sure where I'm going to go with it. I mean, I know children's books are don't pay well historically, but. I thought about at one point making a graphic novel, comic book type thing. Maybe that'll be the way. I don't know.
Well, it's a crap game no matter how you do it. Some of the ideas you think are going to go over big and they don't, and then others you think won't go over and they might.
Right.
It's children's books are very shaky. I've tried. I've done several. With Golden Books,
right.
But they don't pay anything. I mean, I told them finally that if I was going to starve to death, I'd do it on my time.
Right. you know, it's, and that to me is really sad, because you would think the most important thing would be the children, right? The generation.
You would think so.
Right. So those
who have made it, it's a fine deal, because they always seem to have one to work on.
Right. Yeah. Because I saw your stuff, I saw some of your Golden Books, and I'm like, they're beautiful. And I've seen some others that I know were beautiful too, but you know, down route, they didn't make any money on it. And you're like, that's a crime.
The only ones that ever made money on it were the old established names.
Right. That's really sad, because those are the ones I think a lot of people, when you get older, you recall those books as a child. So those are the most powerful influences you have growing up, yet those artists weren't paid that well.
You know what my most famous book of all, the one I remember all these years, is Peter Rabbit.
Yeah, funny. yeah. That's, it's, you know, and see, I remember, I don't know if you remember this book, but I remember there was one called The Saggy Baggy Elephant.
Oh, I've heard of it. I don't recall seeing it. But.
It was a golden book, and I just cannot, and I actually, I felt kind of silly because here I was in my 40s, and I went out and bought it, and they're like, oh, you must have a child. I'm like, oh, just me, you know, so, you know.
Well, I do that, too. I buy all kinds of children's books if I see some idea that I think will go. But
just to look at the illustration. Now, my other question for you was, you have, when you were doing a lot of these illustrations, did you have a, I think they call it a morgue. Did you have a place where you had a reference material and pictures?
I did indeed. Okay. I had 3 filing cabinets, legal size, full of stuff.
Okay.
I didn't use it all, but it was there if I ever needed it. And
so if somebody said, you know, Lowell, we need an aardvark, you could go and look for...
I could get an aardvark, yeah.
That's great. Because I still love that aardvark, by the way, that you did. It's...
Well, that was the first job I did in New York.
Oh, that's
the first one.
And my wife looked at him, and she didn't. I didn't tell her anything. I didn't say anything about what I liked. I said, "Look at some of Lowell's stuff, and tell me which one you like of these that you like the best." She said, "You know, I really like that aardvark." I said, "Okay." You know, she says, "I don't know what that's for, but I like the aardvark. I don't know what the ad was for." I said, "You know,
it was a story in the old Liberty magazine. It's defunct now, but." They were talking about what a crazy animal the aardvark was. He didn't know what he was because he had the nose of a pig and a feet like a ton of, I forget all the characteristics now, but it was so fun to do.
Yeah.
I did quite a few animals, as a matter of fact, but not many for illustration purposes. For Reader's Digest, I did a collection, like a little compendium of animals, the zoo, and did a whole lot of those. But these were not gouache. These were with pencil.
Oh, okay.
Black pencil on a frosted acetate.
And, that'd be neat.
And they were supposed to shoot those straight, lined cuts. But somebody decided that it was too fine, it wouldn't work, and so they finally did a half tone of that. So I got an award for them, not a big award, but somebody thought they were good.
But, I bet they were. I haven't seen those.
Yeah. Well, I have an extra copy if you like. I can send it to you.
I'd love to see that because I love seeing different I'm a big fan of different styles. I just love to, you know, and I'm a... I don't know. I guess I'm a throwback because I like the old illustrations. I just, you know, I'm
dinosaur too. I agree with you, and then I tried many different styles, fitting it to a customer. I mean, with one magazine, it'd have a little bit of different style that another one would have, and then I did some crossword puzzle covers.
And oh yeah, yeah.
Something.
I give you a lot of credit because I find it right now as a professional, I'm a graphic artist as a professional. I work for a large corporation, FedEx, and they have all kinds of little subgroups within their groups that they want a logo for, you know? Uh-huh. So I do a lot of logo work and
fun.
Yeah, it's fun, but the problem I have is it's not a problem. It's just that the challenge I have is that a lot of people they'll say, I want this logo. And their style is not necessarily my thing, my style. And so I've got to suck it up and do what they want because they're the ones that are, you know, I have to serve. So, but it's hard for me because I'm a throwback but I do what they ask and that's.
Well, that's why my style changed so much. In the beginning, I was a magazine illustrator. And then I was a book illustrator. Yeah. And then I became pop-up artist, making pop-up cards, and made dimensional cards that were a lot of fun. I had more fun doing them than I did the illustrating, actually.
Yeah, that was. Then you went to, you did woodworking too.
Yes, I did. And that's carved that quite good.
That's incredible. You ran the gamut. I mean, you did, you know, everything but animation.
I decided that I didn't have a hobby. I was doing art for to please everybody, right. And I didn't have anything that I had to, didn't have to look to somebody to okay.
Right.
I needed it, so I said, "Well, I'll do woodwork, and I'll do it for me, and I'll do it the way I want it, and nobody has any say in it, that whether they like it or not." And
well, so, they're beautiful, by the way. I saw them on your website; they're unbelievable.
Thank you. Well, I've done quite a few, but I gave them all away. I only have a few left. I have my fire engine and the barbershop quartet.
Now and those comic strip submissions, that was that brush or pen and ink?
The comic strip?
Right, did you
was
just
all pen and ink.
Pen and ink, yeah.
Yeah. Or actually, it was felt pen.
Really? Felt pen?
But I haven't found a good felt tip pen yet. I was happy with that. What do you use?
I like, I found a, I've been experimenting. They have these new brush pens out.
Yeah.
I found some of them were okay, some of them not so great. And then I found a couple that were really good, and then I found this really nice old Japanese fountain pen that has a really good flex to it, the nib.
Oh.
And that's a beauty. And I've been playing with that more lately.
What are you going to do when it wears out?
probably find myself in a bad situation.
Yeah. I've had those small pens that were beautiful. Some of them worked beautifully, and then I couldn't get another one to work like that. And
that's sad. Yeah.
That's what used to make me so mad.
I like the brush. I spent a lot of money experimenting with the Winsor & Newton brushes and stuff. And the problem with the brushes to me, and I know this sounds bad, but I'm kind of lazy. I didn't like having to worry about upkeep of those brushes so much, and I've always felt like you got a brush that was tapered just right, and then after a while it wouldn't be right, and then you're trying to buy another one, and then it dries up or something. You forget to clean it right. You didn't clean it well enough, you know?
Let me tell you what happened to me one time. I had a dozen new Winsor & Newton brushes, and the moths got underneath them.
Oh, no.
They ruined all of them.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful. When somebody masters a brush, there's nothing like it. It's just, you know.
Well, I always use the best brushes I could get, and it doesn't pay to be cheap on those. But most of us are careless with them. And
I mean, I love the Sable. The Sable brushes were the ones I thought were the best. And they have Kalinske, I think, makes a Sable brush now. It's supposed to be really nice. It's a Kalinske Sable, I should say.
I've been wanting to try those, and I'll probably get some.
She hand does them, I guess. Yeah. I ordered one to try it, and I said, this is a really pretty brush. But for speed, and like you said, in today's time, a lot of people are converting to just doing it right on the computer, and I just don't. I haven't mastered the computer. I don't like that.
Well, brushes I don't use very many because I can't. I have Parkinson's, and my hand shakes, and it has affected my vision so that I can't see anything. So what I do now is broad watercolors, I mean, washes.
Yeah. When did that? Now, this is kind of a personal question. You may not like to want to answer, and that's fine too. But when did you start to notice the symptoms from Parkinson's?
About 20 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, I've been out of business pretty much for 20 years.
Okay.
But I can do gallery style watercolors. I can do those.
That's good.
Simple subjects. It's fun. I still try. I don't care. I have what I need, and this is a little extra that I can do to keep busy.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. Now, are you anywhere as close to Jackson, New Jersey? Do you know?
I haven't spotted it, but I understand it's in the middle of the state. And we're up near the border, in the northern border, in a little town called Wanaku. They pronounce it Wanaku. It looks like Wanak.
I would love to, you know, meet you sometime.
I'd love to meet you, too. I mean, I worked at home all my life, and I didn't meet very many people, so I didn't get to know very many people personally. And I would love to meet you if you can make it sometime.
Yeah, I would love it, because I go up there to see my sister and her family. Like, we're going to be probably going up in November.
How far you go up?
We'll be up. I mean, we'll be going to Jackson, and I'd have to look on the map to see where you're at as far as how far.
I think it's a half of the state across.
Maybe, you know, I could probably do it, you know.
We go clear up to Cape Cod from here, and it's a 3.5-hour trip, and no bother.
Cape Cod is absolutely beautiful. I've been there 2 or 3 times.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
It is. I love the, I personally like Nantucket. But I like Martha's Vineyard's pretty to visit, and it's pretty to look at. But Nantucket, to me, is still that whaling town. You know
yeah.
that.
Well, let me tell you something. I as an artist, once I went to what's the big school in New York? I can't think of the name of it right off. Well, anyway, I went to New England on a trip. And they had an open house that day, and they showed these old houses. And I fell in love with them. And so from that point on, I became an antique collector and an old house. So I lived in the oldest house in Fairfield, and it's a little small saltbox house.
And
recently, when we moved, I sold it after 50 years and had it out at an auction and sold everything and moved to New Jersey. And we live in a nice condominium-style home now.
Yeah. I'd love to visit you and check out your, you know, your studio and just to meet you, you know. And
well, I'd love to have you. I mean, my stuff is all over the walls here.
Maybe I'll come up with my son. What I would do if we go up in November? How about if I just give you a ring before we do, just to touch base?
It'd be a wise idea. You know, to make sure we're here.
Yeah, and just see what, you know, makes, you know.
But I'd love to have you if you could make it.
Yeah, that would be great. That'd be great, because this would be a lot of fun. My son would love to see your stuff, too. He's like, because he saw some of your stuff. He's like, oh, it's really cool. So I do get a lot of, I meant to tell you, there's, I don't know if you're familiar with the online site eBay. They have some of your work on eBay listed for sale.
Oh, they do?
They have some illustrations and I was going to bid on a few. I haven't done it yet, but I'm probably going to bid on a few and see if I can grab them.
I don't know where they could have any originals of mine. I don't know of any of them there.
You know what? I don't think they are originals. I bet you they're just the magazines.
They may be clip sheets or they may be photocopies.
Photocopies.
I use some photocopies when I don't have the original, and they're good. They look good. But they fade, I think, in time.
I would love to post a couple of your strips on my online, but you know I would never do that without your okay. Just to show people, you know, some of the, because I've had a lot of people listen to the interview with you, and they were like, "Man, I didn't." It's good to know the person behind, you know, the work.
That's absolutely right.
You know,
did you know Leif Erich, Leif? King, I can't remember his name. He had a show, Today's Inspiration.
Oh, no, I didn't know. Not familiar with it.
He's in Canada, but he's on the computer. And I don't know if he's still on now. He's had some bad luck recently, and I don't know if he's still on.
Oh.
But he was doing all of the illustrators of the 40s and 50s.
Oh, that's neat.
And he'd do every style imaginable.
Yeah, that's neat. I love that style. I love the between the 40s and the 50s and early 60s. Just really neat.
That was the golden year.
I agree. Yeah. I think that, yeah. Well, there was a lot of, I don't know what the word would be, care or skill that was put into the work. You know, they really cared.
Well, they did. They did. But my problem was I was 20 years too late. By the time I got old enough to go to work, I went to New York, and the business was on the way down. And as I improved, the business got worse. And finally, I had to just give up on it and go to doing the comic book covers and things like that.
Yeah. And now I think it's even more narrow. It's a narrow market now.
Yeah, it certainly is.
You know, and that's what really bothers me. And, you know, I feel bad for even people that are younger than, you know, myself coming up.
Yeah. There's no place for them.
Right. You know, we've gotten, I don't know where you point the finger. I don't know where you say this is where it started to go wrong. I don't know.
Well, it started with the advent of photography. The artists in those days used to go down and take pictures of all the actors in place, and then they'd go down home and paint it. And then the people decide, well, if they're going to use an actual model, why don't we use them too? And so photography began to take over. And now it's photography is being replaced by computers.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know where it goes from there, but
I don't either. I almost wonder if, you know, I just don't see I see a lot of what they call web comics now, but nobody's really making money on it, you know.
No.
And it's okay for when you're 18 years old and you're 20 years old, you know, you don't have a family to feed or, you know what I mean? It's okay. But for me, that's not tantalizing, because why would I want to stop what I'm doing and invest in a webcomic when I know it's not going to...
Well, the problem is you can make more doing something else than you can by doing the art that you like to do.
Right.
I'm sad to say. I don't like saying that, but...
But a lot of people... I know I've talked to some younger webcomic people, and they're like, well, you know, I like the webcomics because I don't have to worry about an editor looking over my stuff. I'm like, but buddy, that's life. You're always, you know, that's what, you know.
That's why I started my wood carving. Nobody could tell me what they liked or did not like. You don't like it, stuff.
Yeah, that's, you know, but I don't know, but I really liked your woods.
Wish I could help you some way. I don't know.
No, I would. You know, I'm just thrilled that I could, shoot the breeze with you.
Well, there's plenty more, I guess.
But
anytime you want to call, it suits me.
Well, if you don't, maybe what I may do, if you don't mind this also, I may even when I get finished with my second draft of a story, if you want to even. Have a look at it.
Oh, I'd love to see it. Sure, I'd love to see it.
Yeah, just be gentle when you. So.
Yeah.
I'm going to send it to my mom too. I said, Mom, my mom reads a lot of novels, and I'm like, going, now keep in mind, I'm still your son, so be nice to me, you know. So, you know.
Don't be like an art director. Be nice.
Yeah, really. No, I've learned you can't have thin skin. My job. I've had plenty of people say, you know, no, I don't like that, when I know in my heart it's the right way to go. And I'm like, okay, but they're the customer, so.
I had an art director one time that always sent the work home for some kind of change or something. And he'd just do that. And one day I put some things in the sketch that I knew it would kill. And so I'd get that out of the way first, and I could do the rest of it the way I wanted to. Well, the damn fool liked only the things that I did to make him mad. He liked the bad, kicked out the good I left in it.
He was
a devil.
I have a boss like that no matter how perfect it was or you felt it was, you knew that he wanted to put his own personal stamp on it.
So I've had that too.
You know, so no matter what, he's going to want something changed so that he can say that he had his stamp on it, you know?
Either that or he wanted to do it in the first place and they didn't want him to do it.
Yeah.
And I had that on a cover for children once. It was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And I had to go, I made three trips into town. And finally, I told the editor in there, I says, I don't care what goes on from here on. I am sending you the bill, and I'm not touching it one more time. So
there you go.
He paid it, and that was it. But but the artist went ahead and made the changes himself, and I'm stuck with it.
Yeah.
He wanted to do it himself is what it was, I found out, and they didn't want him to.
So he kind of resented you for that.
Yeah,
he
was going to kill it no matter what, I think.
What was your typical deadline on a magazine illustration? Like if you
For Collier's, I used to have over the weekend. I'd pick it up Friday and deliver it Monday morning.
Man.
But I was fast, and maybe it'd take 2 days occasionally.
So when you did Collier Magazine, were you able to hand-deliver it, or was it mail? Or how did
I hand-delivered it. I lived in Southport, Connecticut, which is just a train ride out of New York.
Oh, okay, okay.
It's about an hour's trip, and I deliver it, and I had an agent, too, who could do it. And
That's great.
The trouble with agents is you have to pay them about 25%.
Wow, I didn't know that, really.
That makes a real dig into it. But it's more than that now, I understand.
But at least they took, they just pretty much, you didn't have to deal with the customer directly, right? He would take care of that?
He would do everything. He'd do the mailing and the collecting of the samples and the footwork and phone calls and taking to lunch and the whole works. Okay. He did everything except do the artwork.
Wow.
And but 25%, I mean,
that's still,
still cuts me. But I was lucky. I did pretty well for most of the time.
I'll say. Yeah. Great.
But Collier's was my fort. That was the best situation I had. The art director thought I was terrific, and I got along well with him, and we worked along well for about 10 years there, and then it went bust.
Do you still have a lot of those originals of the Collier work?
I don't have a lot of them, but I have a few. I have about half a dozen originals.
Yeah. Beautiful.
And I kept them in the dark most of the time, so the colors are still fresh and new.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Another thing that was good about gouache illustration, too, is if they needed a little touching up, I could freshen them up by taking some rubber cement thinner and a piece of cotton and wipe it all over the board. And it cleans all the fingerprints and grease and oil and whatever's on there. And they freshen them up real nice.
Wow. I know. And it won't hurt the gouache or anything?
No, it won't hurt the gouache. You have to use it on watercolor, though, with that rubber cement thinner. It will only work on the water paints.
Oh, okay.
But it cleans up very nice. It takes all the dirt and whatever's on them. I got a painting back from Collier's once. Had a big dirty heel print right in the middle of my heart.
Oh.
Somebody walked on it.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
So you could tell they took good care of it.
Jeez. But you're able to get that off?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Rubber cement thinner takes it right off it.
Well, all right. I really appreciate you chatting some more.
Well, anytime you want to, just give me a ring.
I sure will, and I'll try to give you a ring before we go up to Jersey and see if we can connect.
Good. You do that.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for talking to me.
All right, Todd.
Okay, take care.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.